Okay, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here, as always. These are the words of Zenki Shibayama on Zen training, or the process of awakening. He writes, "The aim of Zen training is to die while alive. That is, to actually become the self of no mind and no form, and then to revive as the true self of no mind and no form. In Zen training, therefore, what is most important is for one to revive from the abyss of unconsciousness. Zen training is not about just being in the state of oneness, nor is it just about having the feeling of no mind. Prajna, wisdom, has to shine out after breaking through the extremity of the great doubt. And then, still, further training is needed so one can freely live the Zen life and function in the world as a new person." So, last Sunday, we ended our study session with a short discussion on the qualities of a meditative mind, which is a very important topic for us to dive into and explore further, so we can have a better sense of what we cultivate on the cushion and how it can permeate our lives. And so today I want us to look at the process of cultivating a meditative mind on and off the cushion using a particular system of stages from our Zen tradition. Trying to understand or to capture the essence of a meditative mind is a bit like trying to capture the essence of wind. The power and function of wind is clearly evident when looking at the effects of its movement. But if you try to see the wind itself, it remains elusive and ungraspable to our senses. A meditative mind has similar characteristics. While it remains unseen or undefined, its impact can be experienced through our general sense of being and through the consequences of our thoughts, speech, action. This same principle applies, of course, to the non-meditative mind, which can also be evident through our general sense of being and consequences of our actions. A non-meditative mind is a grasping mind that is entangled in self-deception, judgment, comparisons, discrimination, fear of criticism, and the perpetuation of karmic streams, as we have been discussing, which inevitably leads to the creation of suffering. On the other hand, a meditative mind is not vested in anything. Again, not vested in anything, even not in itself. It is wide open, supple, nimble, dynamic, right? All those words, they have great meaning, but when you look at what they mean, you can't find it. Because if it's open, it's open, it's everywhere. Supple, moving, nimble, dynamic. How do you grasp it? How do you point at it? So a meditative mind is naturally, because of all those characteristics I just mentioned, naturally in accord with a changing reality, which means it is changing in order to be in accord, or it has to be changing in order to be in accord with a changing reality. The gradual cultivation of Zen training is reflected in a movement from a non-meditative or untrained mind to a boundless state of being. We chant this regularly at the end of Zazen, right? Reality is boundless. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. And in terms of practice, to perceive means to discover our own boundlessness. Not to figure it out or to understand. To perceive through our being. So to discover our own sameness as that essence, and thus to merge with the boundlessness of reality itself. To be in a cold is actually not at all to understand. To understand implies two. The one who tries to understand and that which is being understood. That's not what we mean by this line. Reality is boundless, I vow to perceive it. It means I vow to release everything and anything that stands in the way of me realizing my own boundlessness. Because when I realize my own boundlessness, naturally I am in accord with the essence of boundlessness. It means to take down the walls. So this gradual movement towards boundlessness is known as the withering process in our tradition, the withering process, in which we get in touch with our own inner mechanisms that create stories, erect walls, and keep us in the same miserable state of being. As we become aware of this automatic mechanism, we begin to see that there is another way to be. And then we can slowly learn to divest ourselves from our own creations. Or at least learn to not further perpetuate it by not following thoughts and not getting entangled in endless ruminations. Basic instructions in Zazen. When a thought or an emotion arises, observe, acknowledge, and do not develop it in any way. Leave it alone. Leave it alone. Learn to leave it alone. This is tough for us because we are accustomed to being obsessive. We obsess with ourselves, with our own thoughts. As we read a couple of weeks ago, right, from the description from Chogyam Trungpa, who said that we prefer to, he gave an illustration or analogy of being in bed and not wanting to get up and take a shower, although you have a bathroom, just preferring to smell your own stench instead of cleaning it up. That's the same thing. It's exactly what we're talking about. Right? To not follow, to not be so mesmerized by what the mind is saying. So to leave it alone and to keep coming back to the open space of just sitting. And the word just, very important. Only, just, nothing else. The non-doing aspect of our practice contains a continuous process of undoing, of all the entanglements and mental constructs we have formed in this lifetime and previous. Chogyam Trungpa writes, it seems important to know something about the medium of meditation and its application. According to the basic Buddhist teachings, in order to learn how to meditate and to learn the basic philosophy of meditation, you must know how the confused mind, the ego, the self, or whatever you'd like to call it, operates. So we could begin by looking at confusion or samsaric mind, non-meditative mind, and then look at how meditation is applied and used as a part of the pattern on the or the path. Meditation is basically an unlearning process. It is undoing and unwinding karmic chain reactions generated by psychological neuroses. So the psychological neurosis he's talking about is what we encounter. Well, we encounter it all the time, but during Zazen, we have an opportunity, because we devote our time just to that, we have an opportunity to learn to not perpetuate. There's a question, are we doing it? Are we actually using the segment of meditation, right? The period of meditation, Zazen, are we actually devoting it to training ourselves to stay? The fact that this is basic instruction, it means nothing, right? It doesn't mean by itself that we're actually doing it. Because we get quiet, we become still, and then we can do whatever we want with that time, right? Even if we stick around physically, it doesn't mean at all that we are doing the work that we decided to do when we decided to take on a practice. So it's a question to ask ourselves, because nobody else would know other than you. So the beginning point of cultivating an open and free mind is the recognition, as he says in this few words I just read, the recognition of being entangled or confused. And then work our way back to our original state of being. Or as he says, to unlearn our habitual ways that form a barrier and create hindrances in our lives. To unlearn. What we call spiritual maturation is a process of shedding all the fixed ideas we have accumulated and have become attached to. But it's not just the past. It's the recognition of I am now continuing that fixation. Now, today, at this moment, I'm following my mind. I'm following a thought. I'm following that root of entanglement. So that has nothing to do with past karma or past experiences. Right? Because if that was the case, then we would never be able to awaken. Because that's all we would be able to do. Just follow automatically. Right? Because if we don't divest this moment from past moments, then we're doomed to repeat. Right? We're doomed to repeat. So if we convince ourselves that we are the way we are because of what happened, or we get entangled because we were entangled, or because of things that we experienced, then we are saying, we are declaring to ourselves that we could never awaken or do anything else. So we have to be honest with ourselves about the way we practice or what we sell to ourselves. The stages of spiritual maturation have been depicted in multiple ways by various teachers from different traditions. One of them, a well-known description, is found in the 10 ox herding pictures, which I'm sure you all have seen it over there. We have it in the entrance. The 10 ox herding pictures originated in China during the 12th century, using the image of an ox to describe the taming of our egoic self, the process of that, and the search for inherent wisdom or nature. The first stage begins with the spiritual seeker searching for the footprints of the ox. Then it goes on to encountering the ox, taming and riding it, and then moves gradually through a releasing process of forgetting the ox and the person who's searching, and eventually relinquishing all dualities, living in a state of complete merging. As in Shibayama's words, prajna has to shine out after breaking through the extremity of the great doubt, And then still further training is needed so one can freely live the Zen life and function in the world as a new person, as a merged person. So each of these 10 stages shows an illustration and is accompanied by a verse. So what I want to do now is read each of the verses, a description on the particular stage, and a short commentary by Chogyam Trungpa. Step one, the verse. In the pasture of the world, I endlessly push aside the tall grasses in search for the bull. Following unnamed rivers, lost upon the interpenetrating paths of distant mountains, my strength failing and my vitality exhausted, I cannot find the bull. I only hear the locusts chirping through the forest at night. The first picture shows us the ox herd desperately looking everywhere for his lost ox. He's dissatisfied with his life, unable to find the true happiness that he seeks. His efforts to secure wealth, friends, fame, and pleasure have not brought him the fulfillment he's seeking. Like many of us, he's seeking something, though he's not sure exactly what it is. What is it that will make life meaningful and bring him long-lasting happiness or contentment? And Chogyam said the inspiration for this first step, which is searching for the ox, is the feeling that things are not wholesome. Something is lacking. The feeling of loss produces pain. You're looking for whatever it is that will make the situation right. You discover that ego's attempt to create an ideal environment is unsatisfactory. You can adjust your position. The second stage, along the riverbank, under the trees, I discover footprints. Even under the fragrant grass, I see his prints. Deep in remote mountains, they are found. These traces can no more be hidden than one's nose, looking heavenward. So the second picture shows that the ox herd has now caught sight of the tracks of the ox, bringing hope that his ox is not lost forever. This could be interpreted to mean that he has recognized his distress and has begun to seek for a solution in the teachings of Buddhism or in any other teaching. But he is still in the stage of thinking and talking about his problems and various possible solutions. He has not yet found a path to follow and has not yet started to practice. I think this applies to those also who are already practicing, because we can ruminate in such a way that still not sure, still practicing, but then the attention is elsewhere. In other words, not yet giving ourselves fully to the practice. Thinking and talking about his problems and various possible solutions. We're very good at that. Chogyam Trungpa said, by understanding the origin, you find the possibility of transcending this pain. By understanding the origin. This is the perception of the Four Noble Truths. You see that the pain results from the conflicts created by ego and discover the heavy marks it leaves on all play of events. You're inspired by the unmistakable and logical conclusions rather than by blind faith. Something is shifting. So what he's saying is we start to realize or recognize the connection between the way we act and the consequences we often complain about. We may not know yet how to do something different or stop doing it, but at least there is here on this stage a discovery of a connection between thoughts, words, actions, and consequences or unwholesomeness. Third, I hear the song of the nightingale. The sun is warm, the wind is mild, willows are green along the shore. Here, no bull can hide. What artist can draw this massive head, those majestic horns? Cannot be drawn. It can only be experienced. Any drawing, in a way, becomes second-hand experience or something to aspire to emulate. In the third picture, the ox herd actually catches the sight of the ox now having started to practice. He glimpses the hidden powers to heal his suffering. But he does not yet understand the source of these powers and how to apply them in his search for peace and contentment. The verse, in saying that I hear the song of the nightingale and the sun is warm, the wind is mild, the willows are green along the shore, suggests that the reality the ox herd glimpses is not something separate from the ordinary things that he experiences, even though he does not yet know this. Right? As in nonsense saying or statement, ordinary mind is the way. Chogyam Trungpa says, you are startled at perceiving the ox, and then, because there is no longer any mystery, you wonder if it is really there. You may doubt it. You perceive its insubstantial quality. You lose the notion of subjective criteria. When you begin to accept this perception of non-duality, you relax, because you no longer have to defend the existence of your ego. Then you can afford to be open and generous. You begin to see another way of dealing with your projects, your life. And that is joy by itself, the first spiritual level of the attainment of the bodhisattva. Fourth stage, I seize him with terrific struggle. His great will and power are inexhaustible. He charges to the high plateau far above the cloud mist. Or in an impenetrable ravine he stands. I have abandoned the whip and ropes. So the fourth picture shows that the ox herd is now caught hold of the ox, using the bridle of discipline to control it. This symbolizes the rigorous discipline required of a Zen practitioner. Although he now realizes that the power to transform his life lies within himself, in his Buddha nature, all of his previous conditionings or karmic entanglements are pulling and pushing him in different directions. Holding the rope tightly means that he must work hard to overcome his bad habits or harmful habits of past events that developed through the ignorance, hatred, and craving that gave rise to all his afflictions. Chogyam Trungpa, seeing a glimpse of the ox, you find that generosity and discipline are not enough in dealing with your projections, because you have yet to transcend aggression completely. You have to acknowledge the precision of skillful means, upaya, and the simplicity of seeing things as they are, as connected to fully developed compassion. The subjugation of aggression cannot be exercised in dualistic framework. complete commitment to the compassionate path of a bodhisattva is required, which is the further development of patience and energy, santi paramita and virya paramita, right? To further develop patience and energy. Extremely, extremely important, right? To not ask, am I patient enough? The answer to that is no. No. So no need to ask. Cultivate patience. How do I cultivate patience is the question. The fifth. The whip and rope are necessary, else he might stray off down some dusty road. Being well trained, he becomes naturally gentle, then unfettered, he obeys his master. That's the mind, or knowing how to work with the mind. How to quell those extreme powers of the mind. So the fifth picture shows that disciplined practice can overcome the bad habits of previous conditioning and bring one into accord with true nature of reality. Although discipline is still needed because the old habits of mind still have power, living in greater awareness of the true reality gives one the energy and direction to live a wholesome life. So this is important, right? Living in greater awareness of the true reality, right? So it means to actually maintain a practice, not to take it for granted, not to take for granted the fact that yesterday I had very deep practice. That has to be thrown away. And then ask about today. We have to ask about today. Where is my attention? Where is my awareness right now? What am I getting caught up in? What am I starting to ruminate about? Why is that all of a sudden so important for me? We have to recognize it. Because if we don't, those powers regain momentum. And the power we cultivate through discipline loses its energy because we nurture something else, because we're vested in something else. Now the ox willingly follows the ox herd home, meaning that the separation between oneself and true reality here in this stage is being overcome. Now being overcome is a process, not has done. Or not, it has been done. It is in the process of being overcome. In other words, there's no point in which we don't have to practice anymore. Chogyam Trungpa said, once caught, the taming of the ox is achieved by the precision of meditative panoramic awareness. Meditative mind, right? Meditative panoramic awareness. And panoramic awareness in this instance, it means actually being able to see all around, or bird's eye view, so then we are not so enamored by what happens, by the drama that we actually create, right? We're not so impressed by what the mind says. So having meditative panoramic awareness, being able to see the before the mind moves, so then when the mind moves, we still remember what it feels like when the mind does not move, or at least have some connection to that. So we can just watch the mad mind. So the precision of meditative panoramic awareness and the sharp whip of transcendental knowledge, which means experiential knowledge. The bodhisattva has accomplished the transcendental acts not dwelling on anything. So we should, when we hear this, not get caught up in those in fixed idea of stages, right? So he's saying the Bodhisattva has accomplished the transcendental acts, not dwelling in anything. That may be so for a minute or a day, but the next minute, next day, completely lost again. Doesn't mean it's a failure. Not at all. It means there is already a recollection of there is another way to be. So we take that recollection and we apply it when we get lost. We find our way back home because only you can do it. Nobody can, well, people, right, good friends as we call them, right, can show us the direction, the way. But if we just stand there, observe, do nothing about it, doesn't work. You can adjust. The sixth stage. Mounting the bull now. Slowly I return homeward. The voice of my flute intones through the evening, measuring with hand beats the pulsating harmony. I direct the endless rhythm. Whoever hears this melody will join me. The sixth picture suggests the tranquility and joy that reunion with the source of existence brings. Now the oxen rides on the back of the ox, joyously playing his flute. The verse suggests that he has been freed from all fears and anxieties, and that so freed, he can now express his creative energies in celebration of life. Express his creative energies in celebration of life. We often talk about giving ourselves permission to be authentic, not stifle ourselves, not compare. I want to be like him or her. Why? Why? What's wrong with our own creative energies? Why do we think it's not enough? Or it's just a thought that says it's not enough. It's another way to see that. So if we learn to not take the thought seriously, we can, as it says here, freely express our creative energies in celebration of life. Chogyam Trungpa, there's no longer any question of search. The ox, the mind, finally obeys the master and becomes creative activity. This is the breakthrough to the state of enlightenment with the unfolding of the experience of Mahamudra, the great seal of reality or suchness. The luminosity and color of the mandala becomes the music which leads the ox home. Seventh. Astride the bull, I reach home. I am serene. The bull too can rest. The dawn has come. In blissful repose, within my thatched dwelling, I have abandoned the whip and robes. In the seventh picture, the oxherd has realized his identity with the ox. The ox can be forgotten, for it is none other than the experience of everyday life, everyday things. This can be interpreted to mean that the separation of practice and realization has been overcome, as has the separation of ordinary reality and ultimate reality, right? So we sometimes refer to it as relative and absolute, or form and emptiness, or we chant it, right? Until now, he has been practicing meditation as a means of achieving enlightenment, but with realization of non-duality of existence comes awareness of the identity of means and ends as one. Practice itself is realization. as Dogen referred to it in one word, practice enlightenment, not the practice to, practice of, or practice as enlightenment. And not just sitting practice. Chogyam Trungpa, even that joy and color become irrelevant. The Mahamudra, suchness, seal of reality, mandala of symbols and energies dissolves into Mahaati, natural liberation through primordial awareness, realizing, being liberated through the realization, and allowing that primordial energies to express themselves. So into Mahaati through the total absence of the idea of experience. There is no more ox. Crazy wisdom has become more and more apparent, and you totally abandon the ambition to manipulate. It's a very powerful statement. Abandon the ambition to manipulate. Well, we have to actually first recognize that big chunk of our attention is devoted to trying to manipulate life or other people. Instead of realizing, merging, we just sit there on our high horse, high seat, right? And then I want life to do this. I want people to do that. And they need to obey me. So here, abandoning the ambition to manipulate. Number 8, whip, rope, person, and bull all merge in no thing. This heaven is so vast, no message can stain it. How may a snowflake exist in a raging fire? Here are the footprints of the ancestors. So then it becomes, as we call it, a living tradition. Because you're no longer looking back at the ancestors, trying to emulate or hoping we will experience what they did. Because now we experience. So here are the footprints of the ancestors. Through our own blinking the eyes, breathing, drinking, walking around. Living and dying. I have abandoned the whip and ropes. So this is the absence of both striving and non-striving. It is the naked image of the primordial Buddha principle. This entrance into the Dharmakaya, the body of reality, is the perfection of non-watching. There are no more criteria. And the understanding of Mahaati as the last stage is completely transcended. Chogyam Trungpa, the eighth picture, tells us that when the duality of self and reality has been overcome, not only is reality, the ox, forgotten, but so is the self, the ox herd. The circle in the picture symbolizes a circle like this here. Symbolizes the all-encompassing emptiness that constitutes the ground of all things. Now, in the awareness of unceasing transformation and total interconnectedness in every experience, one is freed from all craving and hatred for others. In this freedom, there is a sense of the wholeness and perfection of ordinary things. So when we realize unity, how could we be rejecting or judging? Because everything is expressing wonder of wonders, as the Buddha stated upon his realization, right? Everything is beautifully manifesting that. Our liking it or not liking it is completely powerless, irrelevant, not important. Because it doesn't do anything to that shining forth when our attention is not somewhere else. We can actually see that or experience that. Everything and everybody shines that. Ninth, too many steps have been taken returning to the root and to the source. Better to have been blind and deaf from the beginning, dwelling in one's true abode, unconcerned with within and without. The river flows tranquilly on the flowers, and the flowers are red. The river flows and the flowers are red. And you experience that sense of tranquility. I have abandoned the whip and ropes. As the nine picture shows, when self and reality, as constructs, are left behind, then things are revealed to be just what they are in themselves. Streams meander on of themselves, and red flowers naturally bloom red. In the ordinary events of life, are found to be most profound truths. So within the ordinary, the most profound is being revealed. Only by seeking the ox as a separate ultimate reality could the oxer discover that there is no separate reality. In other words, there's no shortcut. That the ultimate is to be found within the ordinary. What he's saying is we can't get there without great discipline, without completely and utterly giving ourselves to the practice. This is not dabbling in practice. This is forgetting everything else and then morning to night practice. Chogyam Trungpa, since there is already such space and openness and the total absence of fear, the play of the wisdom is a natural process. The source of energy, which need not be sought, is there. It is that you are rich rather than being enriched by something else. That you are rich. Realizing you're rich, you no longer seek to get something from someone or something else. Right? So poverty mind ends. Because there is basic warmth as well as basic space, the Buddha activity of compassion is alive, and so all communication is creative, fresh and new. It is the source in the sense of being an inexhaustible treasury of Buddha activity. This is then the Sambhogakaya, or the body of bliss and joy. And number 10. Barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust laden, and I'm ever blissful. I use no magic to extend my life. Now, before me, the dead trees become alive. I have abandoned the whip and ropes. Right? Barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people. Only then I can actually mingle with the people of the world, right? So to empty out, well, we call it egoless, right? To empty out totally. Only then there are no barriers, there are no walls, there are no calculations. There's no trying to manipulate anybody or oneself. So finally, the 10th picture shows the enlightened oxherd entering the town marketplace, doing all of the ordinary things that everyone else is doing. But because of his deep awareness, everything he does is quite extraordinary. He does not retreat from the world, but shares his enlightened existence with everyone around him. Not only he leads fishermongers and innkeepers in the way of the Buddha, but because of his creative energy and the radiance of his life, Even withered trees bloom. And Chogyam, Nirmanakaya is the fully awakened state of being in the world. That's the Buddha's appearance, being in the world, teaching others, guiding others. Or the Buddha in a human form. Its actions is like the moon reflecting in 100 balls of water. The moon has no desire to reflect, but that's its nature. That state is dealing with the earth and ultimate simplicity, transcending, following the example of anyone, transcending the need to follow anyone's example. It is the state of total flop or old dog, he says. Right? Not trying hard to do anything, actually. So that's the 10th stage. Now we have to add to that that these stages, while they seem very neat, organized steps, right, that may give us the impression that our practice will or should progress in such a linear way. But in reality, it's a lot messier than that, right? And we move between all kinds of experiences in all kinds of directions on a daily basis. Sometimes it feels like we are making progress. Other times it feels like we may be regressing. But the stages described in these Oxfording pictures refer to true experiences. So we could use them as helpful guides that can encourage us or remind us that there is another way to be. So in our practice, the aim is to lose interest in the thinking process, all of it, so it can gradually exhaust itself and dry up like a tree that withers when it has no more sap running through its trunk. And the sap could be equated to our thoughts and emotions that we get entangled in, right? And we get so enamored by, to lose interest in that, allowing ourselves to actually wither, abandoning thoughts and not perpetuating emotions, although it may feel as if we are numbing up or turning against ourselves. It actually, in reality, is quite the opposite. Or we can say that there's no way to bypass that feeling of numbing ourselves when we don't go along with our thoughts and feelings. So we have to learn to be comfortable with that. Because what happens, actually, when we do it, it leads to an awakening and it fills us with the freshness of life. So you take the staleness of our thoughts and emotions and you let them wither so then the freshness of life of today can come in. We have to make space, in other words, right? As in a dragon howling in a withered tree, that line. And the most effective way to wither and come to life is to observe, to simply observe the ongoing machinations and maneuverings of the mind. Watch carefully where the mind wants you to go, how tempted you feel to go along with that, how often it manages to sweep you off your feet. Watch it and learn to divest. Right? Slightly observe the arising and vanishing thoughts, memories, emotions, and allow it all to happen while you keep settling into the anchored stillness of your zazen. And if you're totally committed to this process, you will eventually be dried up all the way, through and through. As in the words of Shishuan, cease, stop, have one thought for 10,000 years. Be a cold ash, decayed tree, a strip of white silk without words upon it. So we could see it as going to sleep, dying when we go to sleep, dying to everything that happened up to that moment, making peace with it. We may not wake up, right? So it's a good opportunity, because we don't know if we're going to wake up. So we go to sleep, make peace, complete, total, utter peace with everything. And then in the morning, wake up. And right as you wake up, that line, stop, cease, have one thought for 10,000 years, be a cold ash, decayed tree, a strip of white silk without words upon it. And it means, white silk without words upon it, means let the day be fresh and new. Don't dump all the stuff from yesterday onto today. So 10 stages, million stages, million directions. Let's use it well. Thank you.